So we are here today, gathered here today to talk about some paranormal stuff. And it's going to be kind of like a quick, it'll be like an interview, right? Nothing that we haven't really talked about before, but it'll be
Okay.
kind of an interview for the benefit of the listeners.
Yeah, kind of. We haven't written our report yet. Which usually, if I wasn't so busy, I preferably would write it like the morning after so that I could get everything down like while it was still fresh. But
we're still learning.
And things have been kind of crazy.
Perfect. Yeah, I know. I know how it goes.
Yeah,
So,
that's definitely going to be an experience that I will not soon forget.
yeah.
That's
All right.
burned into
Well,
our minds.
number one, why don't you take us out?
Okay, so for those of you joining us for the first time, welcome to the Crypto Science Podcast, where we talk about paranormal, cryptids, UFOs, and all that jazz. Today, we're going to be talking a little bit about investigation training and just kind of what investigation looks like. And so, therefore, we have a few guests with us today. So, for those of you who are joining us, do you mind telling us like your name, a little bit about yourself, and kind of what really got you interested in the paranormal?
So I'm Mac.
And I'm Heather. Mac will go first
Okay.
because she's awesome.
Oh dear. What got me interested in the paranormal? My life. So I've always ever since I was a child, I've always been able to, as I say, see dead people. Let's see. Sorry, I'm like really nervous. Okay.
Okay,
It's
just
fine. So
leave.
just kind of do what you feel comfortable with and what you want to reveal, and then go from there.
Okay. So, when I really started thinking about it was I went on a mission for my former church, and it was there. I went to Iowa, and it was there that I kind of really noticed that I had something interesting going on. Like, there was a time when me and one of my companions were walking down the street, and because it was like a proselyting mission thing, and I saw this guy on the other side of the street, and he was kind of dressed in like I would say probably like 1940s, 1950s, I don't know. He had a cool hat on. Anyway, and that's what caught my eye is I
I
liked his
remember you
hat.
mentioning the hat,
Yeah.
yeah.
And I was like, we should go talk to that guy. And she's like, oh, what guy? And there's like, he's right there. And I looked back and he was gone.
What time of day was it?
It was around 2 in the afternoon. It
Okay.
was, yeah, it was early afternoon. And so it was kind of then that I realized something very interesting about me. And I've had countless experiences since then, and I never really tried to like talk to these people that I have seen, because growing up I was always taught that all those people I was seeing were evil. They were, you know, sons of perdition and stuff like that. So I did never really tried to reach out until I met Heather
It's me.
and realized maybe there was more to this than I was letting on. And so I decided to, we just, well, yeah, we
We
decided
kind of
to.
like sparked, we sparked our kind of spiritual awakening when it came to
Yeah.
paranormal, and we like fed each other's fire kind of,
Yeah.
and it just turned into like a blaze. So we really feed each other like energetically, like with excitement and the passion for this, and also psychically as well. We kind of bolster each other, which is really cool when we actually get together and do our investigating. Like you'll see in the video that when we actually started doing connect, I call it connecting, and we join hands and we sit and we literally just kind of have our energy going
Going in a
in a circle
circle.
around us, like out my right hand into her and then out her right hand and back into me.
And that, you know, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
And I think during the investigation, which we'll talk about, we had the best experiences, the most powerful experiences while we were doing that. So,
Yeah, definitely. Like we kind of picked up on each other a little bit too. it's kind of hard. Like right now, we're still trying to figure out how to pick up on specific things that we want to pick up outside of us. Like we were picking up on things. I picked up a childhood fear that Mac had, which was kind of silly, but we'll mention that later too. But I got into the paranormal. I have always kind of been very interested in the aspect of ghosts and stuff like that in the afterlife. And it's something that's baffled people for forever. Nobody really has a full understanding of exactly what happens to them after they pass. But we kind of had this urban legend in our family growing up that my grandmother Jovina, my dad's mother, would come and visit us at 3:33 at night or in the day. And it's whenever we see the 3:33, we always think, oh, you know, grandma's watching out for us. It means we're doing something right. And later on, when I was in high school, we were exchanging ghost stories and stuff like that. And someone was like, oh yeah, like a lot of stuff happens at 3 o'clock. I was just overhearing and I kind of whipped my head and I was like, what about 3 o'clock in the morning and ghosts? And they're like, yeah, that's like a really active time. And so that kind of gave me that affirmation.
3:33 in the morning as well as 3:33 in the morning.
Yeah, 3:33 in the morning, and then a lot of stuff like significantly happens in our lives. If we are trying to make a decision, like for instance, my mom was trying to decide whether or not to get an apartment for my brother, and right when we were debating it, the clock struck 3:33, and I was like, "Hey, mom, I think grandma's trying to say that this is a good one for us." Just kind of like that thing, like a little family urban legend. But I had growing up, I would hear voices and stuff that weren't there, not like inside my head, but like actually be able to hear them with my ears. I remember very vividly, I remember I was a kid and I was at home and my mom was taking a nap or something, and I very vividly heard her calling me from downstairs. And I went downstairs and there was, you know, she was still in bed, she was still taking a nap, and so stuff like that. And Mac and I are both really huge fans of this show called Supernatural, which has kind of...
What's that really, about?
That is, it's about the supernatural. But that's really been a huge inspiration for Mac and I as well. I mean, I think I speak for both of us when I say that. But, and then like I started kind of... What?
I just realized you're the interrupters. Which one's fire and which one's kerosene? You know?
Interrupters?
I think what's okay, that? So Mac is, I think, I don't know, that's a hard question actually.
I mean, I'm a fire element, but I'm more subtle element.
Yeah, like I'm the more like kind of aggressive one,
and I'm the one that keeps her subtle.
Yeah, she keeps me grounded
from flying around.
But yeah, like when I started developing these skills and realizing that I had them, I started more looking into them and realizing that they were actually a thing, and like that parapsychology is actually a thing. And it, you know, Jason, you're the actually one that introduced me to that. You're like, you should go look up what parapsychology is. And I was like, what's that? And so that's really interesting. It's actually something that people can study scientifically.
Yeah.
And so I started developing it. I started reading as much information as I possibly could. I would notice that when I would kind of get into like this state where I was kind of falling asleep, or at least trying to go to sleep, I would start hearing very, very clear voices come to me at night. And I know this sounds really scary, but it's actually really cool because I've actually had like conversations with people. And when you start developing those sort of things, though, I kind of always mention that you start to be kind of a beacon, because, you know, word gets around and
people are like, oh, she can hear us.
Let's talk to her. So I actually woke up one night with a group of people standing in my room, and I could see through them, and I was really freaking out, and I ran to my mom's room. I was like, mom, something's happening. I don't know how, like, there's people. I was like, how do you not see them? They're standing right there. And she's like, Heather, do I need to take you to the hospital? I was like, no, just shut up. Just stop. But the first time that they came to me, there was one figure that really started coming to my room, and he was very polite. I was very polite to him. I said, I acknowledge that you're here, because he was standing over me when I was trying to go to sleep. And I was like, but I'm kind of afraid of you right now. And I'm not telling you to go away forever, but I just need time to process that you exist. And he just slowly dissipated. And I was like, thank you. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple people show up. I remember there was one person, I've kind of done my own little experiments. Like I told Jason, I told you about the flame experiment with fire. Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little more about that in the context of, you know, you're kind of finding yourself along this path, right?
Yeah, like
you're coming together. You realize you have this gift and you have this connection with the spirits and you're learning stuff about it. And then, you know, kind of what guided you to want to become a paranormal investigator, and then what kind of experiments you had with that. So
I have always had this passion for helping people. And I feel like I want to be able to help people on the other side, because it's so much different over there. Like, they may or may not have the resources that we do, but it's like, what if I could be like a psychiatrist to the dead, you know, or like a therapist to the dead, and help people cross over, or help people reconnect with their loved ones that are still alive, or help people finish unfinished business on earth so that they can cross over. But, you know, some spirits, they just like, there's no unfinished business. They just don't want to leave, you know, but I guess that is kind of unfinished business in a way. They're still attached to the earth. They don't want to leave the earth.
Whether they want to or not, you know, there might be some situations where they don't even realize that they're in the state they are, right? A lot of distraction, or even a lot of, you know, religious dogma that's imprinted on it too, because, you know, Catholics have a strong belief in purgatory.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there are lots of folks who are in the camp that think like a haunting is kind of a form of purgatory, right?
Oh yeah, well certainly. Yeah, I actually have like a whole essay that I wrote on kind of looking into religion and kind of connecting it with what I know about things spiritually from, you know, speaking and communicating with spirit guides and spirits on the other side of what they've told me. But there are certain things, like I've been told outright from a spirit that as like living beings, there are only so many things. There are certain things that we are not meant to know.
Mm-hmm.
And they've told me that like straight out.
Maybe that we can't comprehend
now. Maybe we're not meant to I don't know, maybe if it's even possible for us to interfere in things.
It's safe.
Yeah, maybe it's not safe, or.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure there's probably a lot of reasons why we're not meant to know something, but.
Now, a lot of paranormal groups have members that kind of go, are either very nuts and bolts kind of science minded and more spiritually fluid and mediumship minded.
Yeah.
Individuals within the group. Now, I feel what's kind of interesting, what I've noticed about our members are that many of us are kind of a blend of both worlds. And I think you two are both really excellent examples of that.
Thank you.
Would you mind expanding a little bit about how you bridge that kind of scientific and spiritual in your research process?
So verification is very important.
That's something we learned in this
our big lesson that we learned in this last investigation, is being objective and verifying information. Because I could easily sit here and be like, oh, I just got a thought that popped into my head, it has to do with this investigation, but really I'm just thinking about hamburgers or something.
Yeah.
Like the ghost, you know, they probably were thinking about hamburgers, but
kind of like recall or remember is that sometimes we get so excited and over enthusiastic that, you know, we think everything means something. And so being very careful that sometimes a hamburger is just a hamburger.
Yeah, I definitely started doing that. Like, it's kind of funny. We have a skeptic on the team who is he's I wouldn't exactly call him like an entirely skeptic. He's open to thought and he's interested in the paranormal, but he kind of grounds us. Like, there was this one point where I was telling him about my family history and that like Catherine is like a family name. And I was looking at this book and I was like, huh, the author's name is Catherine. I didn't even notice that. And like, there was this funny thing, and Mac took something that was given to her that she thought was supposed to be put back, and it was like an arrowhead, and we'll talk more about that.
Yeah.
And he picked up another book that I brought. He's like, huh, that's funny. The author of this book says Mac should put back the scary arrowhead where she got it.
So yeah, he's a bit of a skeptic.
Yeah, but he definitely helps ground us so we don't like run away with ourselves.
Yeah.
You know. But how we keep that in check is we have to have things that can scientifically verify, like if Mac and I feel something energetically, if we have an EMF detector to verify that, that shows that we're not just, you know, woo-wooing, you know? And if we are having a conversation with a spirit psychically and we get words that correlate with it on a word box or a spirit box or an EVP even, then that is verifying that we're not just going away with ourselves. And there are so many different pieces of equipment and ways to do that. And like, for instance, with the, you know, the candle experiment, where I had kind of this hypothesis that I thought maybe, you know, spirits that we know can harness energy from living things, some, you know, they can kind of zap us of our energy and use that to manifest. And I had a theory, or sorry, not a theory, because we're speaking scientifically. We don't want to say theory, we want to say hypothesis. That
just as good. Hey.
But I had a hypothesis that spirits could get energy from candles, like open flames. And so I had a spirit that I strongly believe was actually my grandfather show up in my kitchen in the middle of the day. And I was trying to get an EVP from him that all came out complete static, like almost like someone was talking in the microphone, like, you know, like that, like with their breath. But that's another story. Anyway, the candle. So I said, okay, wait right here. I want to try something out. And I went to go get the candle, and he waited very patiently. I was actually very surprised that he was still there when I got back. And I put the candle lit in front of him, and it's like he knew what I wanted him to do. He put his hands around the candle, kind of like cupping it around, and he kind of like moved his fingers a little bit. And then there was a purse, my mom's purse, and a like a jello mold was sitting on the counter. And he was able to take his index finger and push the purse with the jello mold like 6 inches across the counter. So, and I took that as verification that he was able to use that energy, you know.
What happened to the candle when the purse was pushed?
I think I was just mostly like just enraptured in the fact that this purse was moving across the counter, but I wasn't really paying attention to exactly what the candle was doing. I know that when he had his hands around it, it was almost like bending towards his hand, you know? And Mac and I have actually done some experiments. I think it's a form of telekinesis. Mm-hmm. Where you can use your energy coming from your hands and you can actually bend the flame. That's actually what I started with when I developed my psychic stuff.
That was one of the first things that you taught me.
Yeah, I brought over a candle. I was like, hey, Mac, you want to try something cool?
Janae, were you with us when we did the metafocus experiments?
That was with what's-her-face.
Ember.
Ember, yes. Sorry, I didn't remember her name. Yeah, I was there for that.
Yeah.
Nothing. For me.
Yeah, we didn't, there were, we did kind of do some like energy experiments, kind of similarly, like kind of experimenting with our own psychic energy and trying to produce some telekinetic results that way, a lot through like kind of altered affecting through meditative states, you know, seeing if you can affect different things if you're in different states of consciousness kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like we got too much out of that. And a lot of factors there. But that's really awesome. And I honestly feel like it comes down to a matter of, it's kind of talent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody, you can technically teach anybody to play piano.
Yeah. That's the exact analogy that I use.
I mean, like, you can do a candle thing a lot better than me, but that's because you've been practicing for so much longer.
You're so much better at seeing them physically with your eyes.
Yeah, I know. But, like, yeah, I was just saying it's a matter of, like, practice and, like, yeah.
Yeah.
But going back to, like, what we were talking about.
I think verification.
Yeah, verification. Thank you. with like the spirit box that we use. We just use.
It was like a little word library.
Steve Huff,
like,
is that what his name is?
Yeah, Steve Huff from Huff Paranormal. We used the Portal.
Yeah, the Portal, his app.
And then we used a couple other ones that were very... I vetted all these apps. I, like, looked at them and made sure that they were legit. And my favorite one was it had an EMF detector in it, and it had, like, a word catalog that they could pick and choose from.
And that's the thing that I was really skeptical about was, like, with the words coming up, I'm like, okay... You know, as humans, we can connect things so easily that, you know, aren't really there and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so, sorry, I'm really bad with my words. No, but
a lot of our listeners are very novice. So if you wouldn't mind, real quick, kind of give a really basic breakdown of what this equipment is that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I guess let's
start with 101.
Ghost hunting 101.
Yeah.
Only we don't use the term ghost hunting.
We like to use paranormal investigating.
Because ghost hunting applies like aggression.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's one of our things is,
in, I'm all Van Helsing'd up. Gun belts with cold water vials.
like Heather was talking about, like these people, these spirits, you know, they are human as well. And we want to be respectful of that while being safe ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to mention too, the EMF detector, which stands for electromagnetic frequency, it can detect the fluctuations in, like, for instance, electronics give off electromagnetic frequency. So a good way to test to see if you can download an app on your phone, because your phone has the capability to sense these frequencies. But how you can tell if the app is actually legit or not, because you have to kind of look at these apps that you get on, especially the free ones, with kind of a skeptical eye. If you take the phone and you put it next to a light bulb that's lit and it spikes, that means that it's legit.
Yeah.
And so that kind of brings into play that there could be a lot of interference. Is what?
That the app is legit, you mean?
Yeah. Because your phone, if you get something, it's like a sensor box app, it'll show you and test all the different sensors, which can also be another valuable tool in that's not necessarily designed for paranormal investigating. And then I was going to mention, too, that when we had the EMF detector going in the word box, Mac and I were doing our connection, and the EMF detector started spiking into, like, the red while we were slowly building into our meditation and connecting. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really cool, and it happened again later on, and I was very upset about something, and I was focusing a lot of psychic energy at someone, an individual, and... We got on camera too that the EMF spiked really high, and a ghost actually told me to be calm.
Yep.
And the voice box usually does, or the word box usually says about one word, like very rarely come up with two words. But yeah, I was like, okay, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm getting really worked up about this, because he told us some very upsetting stuff that was not true.
Can you describe a little more about the word box?
So the word box, it uses a, like a library or a bank is what they call it, of words. The spirit
word bank.
Yeah, word bank. Thanks. That's
sorry. I'm laughing because of something that happened during our investigation. Okay.
But they can pick and choose from those words and using their energy. It's kind of technical, but that's kind of
right.
Yeah, that's the basis of how it works exactly. And those are really cool. Like, people might have heard of the ovulus. They use that a lot on like TV stuff. I wonder what the app, I can look up the app real quick to see the one that I actually really love.
Using these are all in apps. These are like all apps in your phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I've all been using the apps because we don't have any like equipment. We don't have money or equipment
now.
For the benefit of our listeners, we're operating literally on a zero budget.
Really funny too, because like if you even think about how we're live streaming, like I'm just using my phone, so like it's amazing how remarkable of a technology a phone is these days.
I know, right?
It's like better than my computer.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it's really fascinating, like the things that you can find and explore, and what's like what people are doing with phone technology.
Mm-hmm.
And what's open source over the internet and stuff.
Yeah.
Start with tricorders.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like I said, when you look at these apps, you need to look at them very objectively. because some of them are, you know, made for entertainment. Some of them are made to look like they're made for entertainment, but actually be good for paranormal investigating, but they need to look like they're good for entertainment because that's going to get them the most downloads for the people that, you know, want to get it for fun and like jokes and stuff, but also the people who want to use it for paranormal investigating, you know?
And ask Heather, I'm very cynical when it comes to the apps.
But
I'm
that's
no,
good.
I don't know.
It's really good though.
Hey, when we're done, why don't you send a list of the good ones?
Oh yeah. I'll definitely do that.
Those in the show notes.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's always really good to be skeptical. Like, I think there's like it's that level of kind of helping to keep grounded. Like, you don't want to go too far the end of like skeptic to where you're so like skeptical, you're closed to a lot of potential new science.
Yeah.
But then you're also like, oh, every new thing is drawing somebody in as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's, and then having a group of people that kind of balances out. Like, I know having somebody on your team going in who's skeptical a bit more, it's like so helpful in investigations.
Yeah. Just as long as they're like being respectful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like respectful skeptics, I think, because, yeah, like you're able to get a lot more legitimate information from that.
Yeah, yeah. And we actually kind of the main topic and the main lesson to be learned from our investigation, like I was saying, was being objective. And that kind of took us down this big old rabbit hole. There was this guy who was, he was supposed to be kind of, he was in, I want to call it like a probation over period to be in the investigative team. But we were doing it at his house, which we know now that people who are directly related to the investigation should not be on the investigation team for that investigation. That's a lot of investigations.
That is. Yeah.
But like
a conflict of interest.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And so he started acting like very weird, and like he kept walking off and like very out of it, and like at one point he even like fell to the ground and like was holding his head like in his hands like this, and he wouldn't like talk to me and stuff. And you can tell on the camera we're all getting really very annoyed and exasperated, because we are like, okay dude, really? Like literally he threw himself on the floor saying that he was being affected, like he was being possessed or something. And then at the end, we found out that he was a compulsive liar from his roommate, which would have been nice to know to begin with.
Actually, let's go into talking a little more about like this investigation itself.
Okay.
Now, you and Mac are both kind of, you're pretty far, like you've got some experience. You're not completely green.
Okay. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. We got an investigation under our belt.
You've got, and you're training through the process to become formal Crypto Science Society investigators, but you guys are pretty on the level already, so it's kind of a formality, right? But for the benefit of the listeners, I wanted to talk a little bit about the process of the actual investigator training first, and then the process of your investigation that you just did. So let's talk about the process of training first. Like, what are things like, I'm sure listeners are like inspired. Like, I want to run out there and go just pick up some apps and go dive in head first into that ectoplasm soup.
I mean,
you
need to make sure that you're safe.
You're safe. You need to be protected.
Defense against the dark class is a prerequisite.
Yeah. So, first thing that I would say to anybody who wants to look into paranormal investigating is you need to be protected and safe both physically and energetically. And you can do that in, you know, different ways. I go to religion and I go to meditation, you know, my own internal energy connected to my higher power. And I find protection and safeness from that. Some people, you know, feel safer with crystals or, you know, stuff like that. Some people have lots of techniques. The point is that you're being protected by something, because you don't want to go into a situation like that where you may or may not encounter something that, you know, might like your energy and might want to attach itself to you.
Well, and going into that, something that you told me, so we wear, you know, our rosaries, the crucifix,
during the investigation,
and like when we first started getting into this, I told you, I was like, well, you know, what if these just don't really work, you know? And you said that, well, it doesn't matter if it really works or not. It's your intent. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're putting your energy into it and saying that, you know, how did you describe it? You described it a lot better than me.
I have no memory of this conversation.
Really?
I'm sure it happened, but
it's
I don't remember. We were talking about symbols.
Okay? Yeah,
because,
that's what it was.
You know, one of the symbols that Mac and I really like is the Devil's Trap from Supernatural, but it is a pentagram. And it's all about the meaning of that symbol to that person, because a pentagram might mean evil to someone else, while someone who knows more about the history knows that an upright pentagram is actually a protection from evil. But to someone else who believes that it is evil, they're going to get a different effect from it.
Yeah.
Like a reactive phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like...
Everybody drink.
Yeah. Wait, I don't have anything to drink. So yeah, just...
It's all about what you, the energy that you put into it.
Yeah.
Is what you're going to get out of it. And that's one of the big reasons, too, why I say that the law of attraction has so much to do with this. Because if you go into an investigation thinking, oh, shoot, I'm going to encounter something evil, something's going to try to attack me, that's a lot more likely to happen. But if you go in, and this is something I'm very adamant about, is doing it in love and acceptance and, you know, not just expecting everything to be dark right off the bat, which is kind of what this guy was doing, which made me very upset, because I feel like I could have done a lot. We could have done a lot more good there for the spirits
if he hadn't
derailed our investigation by making it seem like something was attacking him.
And then I guess the other point too, in terms of safety too, it's just like logistics of anything. It's like, let someone know where you are.
Exactly. You never investigate alone.
Yeah.
Never investigate alone.
Buddy system.
Buddy system. And then we have a safe word too for when things get too hot and heavy. It's shenanigans and people come running.
Nice. Code word shenanigans. Calling shenanigans. That's awesome.
Shenanigans on that stuff.
When we started the group, back in the day, back in college, we had a checkout sheet, right? Like, check the boxes. You got to do one of these things. And we have observation by a qualified investigator and an evaluation process and stuff like that. And we got a list on that checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we could run through that really quick and see where we're at with everything. And maybe some of your impressions and thoughts. Janae, did you have something to add?
Oh, I was just thinking in terms of, since this investigation was such, like, I think a really fascinating thing, that might be a good way of, like, exploring it. Just, like, what happened in the interview process and then what happened with different aspects of that that kind of played into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think we talked a little bit about deductive reasoning and stuff already.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A little bit about mission planning. At least as far as this particular one's concerned, tell a little bit about like what, how you chose this spot and maybe who your contacts were and how you went into setting that up.
So this investigation kind of fell into our lap a bit. It did, in fact, even though the guy lied about everything that happened to him, it was in fact a spirit, like there were spirits there.
Yeah. We got a lot of good things.
We got a lot of good stuff. A lot of good evidence. It's funny because we actually, looking back at the evidence now, I realized that they were actually trying to communicate with us that this guy was full of BS.
Yep.
And I could tell that they were getting very upset with him because they were being misrepresented by him. But we met this guy. It's very good to go to like places where you're going to find like-minded people, because these places is actually where we got this investigation. We went to a gem and crystal fair, and we met people that were more kind of into the spiritualism and, you know, more open to that sort of stuff. And
you were trying to do a different site when we were.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah. I kind of like my big white whale is the St. Anne's retreat up in Logan Canyon,
which we still want to do.
We're trying to get in contact with the owner, but it's proving difficult.
I picture you with a spear on the boat in the desert, which is out there.
My spear is love energy, though.
I may have. Love energy.
Love and peace.
Oh god, you should have seen Mac and I trying to cleanse the house. We just like were like
love, peace, happy thoughts.
We're doing like interpretive dance with the smudge, like happy thoughts, love, brightness, puppies. Anyway.
All by spirit puppies.
Yeah.
So we met this guy at the gem fair.
Mac and I got a very not great vibe off of him right away. But
we were so excited
about having an investigation that we really kind of pushed it back. We pushed back our own personal discomfort for the investigation. Yeah,
that's weird. Because I've never done that, have I, Janae?
No, not at all.
Of course not, Jason.
But yeah, and then you know, we went over to his place to have what I call an initial walkthrough, where Mac and I both have a notebook and we don't say anything to each other as we walk through. We just write down our impressions.
One of the things that we kind of learned about this part is that we should do that walkthrough that you're talking about before
we do the interviews.
Before we do the interviews, because he told us about what was going on.
And then we were expecting something. Yeah.
So that was something.
I think it kind of skewed our information that we interpreted.
Yeah.
The seed's been planted and now you're looking for it.
Yeah, exactly. And then Mac and I, after we did our walkthrough, he gave us a tour of the place. Mac and I went to separate rooms and we did a 20-minute meditation and kind of felt what we felt, and we wrote everything down. And then at the end, we compared notes.
Yeah. And should I tell him what he said was going on?
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
So, one of the things he said was that the house burned down, and then later it was burned down twice.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that was later information from apparently a neighbor that had been there when it burnt down the second time, but conveniently he didn't speak English, and then also conveniently he left to go to a funeral for 3 months.
Yeah,
so we couldn't interview him.
So yeah, it's very important to verify everything.
Yeah, and then we couldn't find any, like, I don't know if it's just hard to find archives because it's a residential, but we were trying to find any information about a house fire, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of funny. He was like, oh, you see these scorch marks on the walls, and like we scrub them so much, and we can't get them. And like on camera, you see like I scratched the soot off with my nail. And I was like, okay,
really?
that's interesting. Good to know. Cool story, bro.
Yeah. So he was saying when it burned down, I think.
What?
You have powers.
Yeah.
when it burned down the first time, I think, was when the family died.
Yeah.
There was parents and
two kids. And then like a dog. They said there was a ghost puppy.
There was. Yeah. And so the first, it was the 12-year-old son had accidentally started the fire, and all four of them died.
This is what he told us.
Yes,
coming out in the interview, right? So you did the interview before you did your walkthrough, right?
Yeah. We did the interview before we did the walkthrough.
A little bit about the interview, because it sounds like it was kind of a...
Yeah, kind of he, as far as reliable witnesses, there was some stuff that he said that made Mac and I kind of raise our eyebrows at each other. Like, he said that about this one instance that he had where he was like levitating and stuff off of his bed, and that was how she like attacked him, which, you know, has happened. But he also mentioned that like she showed up a lot more when he was like really drunk and stuff. So
A succubus?
What
is he under attack by a succubus?
No, I don't think so. I really, now that I
does he have, want to be under attack by a succubus?
I think he wanted to be under attack by a succubus. I think he was trying to make us believe that,
he was trying to make it romantic.
Yeah, like he was like, because I got I don't know. I think I misinterpreted some stuff, and it ended up turning into like he was like playing with this narrative that the ghost wanted him to like
date her. The female ghost. Yeah.
And he was like, I just got an EVP that said, I will kill you if you do not date me. And I was like, can I verify that? And I listened to it and I was like, yeah, that's Andy talking in the background. And he's not saying, if you won't date me, I will kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a lot of fantasy.
Dial it back just a little bit.
Sorry, I go on rants. I apologize. Yeah.
I kind of both do.
Especially since other people will be listening to this, trying to keep things as anonymous as or like vague as possible in some ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it also like going back to kind of like the whole interviewing process, how much information, how important it really is, and how much information you can really get. And then it kind of helps to protect yourself into like being very careful, like what is this information, what's being said to me, and then how are we going to go into this investigation based on the witness account?
Yes, exactly. And because, you know, it's, I don't want to discredit what a witness says, but you need to think about it from like maybe possibly like this had something to do with it, and maybe their mind was altered because they were drinking, or maybe this really did happen, but maybe they misinterpreted it as something else. Or there are so many different components that go into whether or not this person, you know, saw this thing and whether or not we're going to be able to verify it or not.
So some fundamental elements to keep in mind when you're doing witness interviews is, one, take into consideration the fact that they are, you know, they're experiencing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They, most of the time, they're frightened, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They want validation. They feel like they're being, you know, they have a concern of ridicule because this is weird and there's these social stigmas about it. Yeah. So they just want to be heard, one. Mm-hmm. So many of the stuff that we, you know, we hear, people just, they want to like vent, they want to tell their story. They want to just vomit language at you about all of this crazy stuff that's ever happened.
Yeah.
And so kind of guiding the conversation to get the information that you need to verify here, right? Like what's the core of the phenomenon? Mm-hmm. What is actually happening?
Yeah.
What is it that they believe is happening?
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not it's verifiably real or not, it is real to them.
Yeah.
To a degree.
Well, like when he was like falling on the floor and doing his stuff, I was just ready to just have it and just be like, okay, just stop. But like Heather was saying, well, we need to treat it as seriously as possible.
Like it's like a fire drill, I said. Even if it's just a drill, but if you don't know it's a drill or not, you need to act like it's a real fire or people might get hurt.
Yeah.
And that's mostly what I was worried about. I mean, we should have really gone with our intuition on this because we had a bad feeling from him from the get-go. So I think that, you know, intuition is a good thing too. Like it's investigators, trust your intuition, you know? And if you get a feeling that something's not right,
listen to it.
And follow that instinct.
So what was the core of the phenomenon here that you were going in to investigate?
We were going in to investigate these spirits that supposedly, we wanted to make it a more peaceful environment for the residents.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were under the impression that this guy was being attacked.
There was poltergeist
there
activity.
There was poltergeist activity.
Yeah.
And we wanted to go and, you know, Mac was actually very adamant. She's like, I feel like, you know, I mean, you can tell him like how much you're.
Well, there was during the meditation that we did, the 20-minute meditation in different rooms, I got a very strong impression that the parents contacted me. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like they were here.
Yeah, but I got the same feeling too.
But I felt like they were, I got a sense of like almost doneness, worried. Just all sorts of parental like concern. And so what we initially thought was we need to help these children so they can
cross over with
their parents.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because it felt like almost like from the narrative that we were working it and that we understood it as was that these kids were stuck in the house. For some reason, they were still attached to the house and they couldn't leave, but the parents could leave, but they wanted to be with the house for the kids, but they couldn't move on. They couldn't cross into the light or whatever you want to call it until they knew that their kids were going to be okay.
Like, and it was very powerful. Like, we both teared up. Like, yeah, there was some very powerful.
And Mac walked in when I was finishing up my meditation, and we just finished up writing, and we looked at each other. I was like, that was wow. Mm-hmm. Like, we got so much emotion coming from that. And it wasn't anything negative. It was just love and concern was what we felt. And I think that can be said, you know, despite the narrative that may or may not have been true, this is the emotion that we felt, and you can't really.
Well, and it's important to note too that I did feel that doneness, that mm-hmm. exasperation as well.
Yeah. And now looking back, I think it was because this guy was, you know, lying about them.
Mm-hmm. And we'll go into that when we get further into the investigation.
Yeah.
So beyond so your meditations and your mediumship impressions, what evidence did you collect?
So as far as the initial walkthrough, one thing that I would like to do in the future is I would like to have an EMF detector going with us everywhere we go in the house. I'd like to document that sort of stuff so that we can bring it back up in our investigation and double check to see if maybe it's a electrical thing or if it's actually was, you know, like a moving spot of EMF, electromagnetic frequency. But like I said, we used these equipment. I wanted to do the candle experiment again to see if we could do it on camera.
Just you guys, sorry to interrupt. It looks like my device is overheating. So if I all of a sudden arm and off the call, I apologize.
Okay.
Yeah. We want to do the candle
thing. Yeah, we want to do the candle thing, but the investigation got cut short because we, you know, he cooked us out early for reasons that I'll go into later. But it's a tricky beast with the...
there she goes.
Yeah, she's gone. Janae, we miss you. but... there has to be a happy medium between being able to verify something electronically and with actual data and being able to verify like your psychic feelings, you know, there has to be a happy medium. There has to be a connect.
I mean, there was like a hole in the wall in one of the rooms that he said that like poltergeist activity threw something at, but there's no way to verify it because
you know,
right. So that's kind of the tricky thing with any paranormal investigation. It's kind of like we've got our witness interview and we've got our physical data and then what we know is happening, but can't, you know, we can't scientifically verify.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. But I know exactly what you mean. And I had kind of a thought too, that I wanted to work with the investigation is one of the reason why it's so good to get like all of the details of these interactions from the witness is that if we can recreate it and have it have a similar experience, we can catch on camera, then that's verification, you know, in a way that's video verification.
Yeah. One of the things we did catch a lot was
oh my gosh,
orbs,
freaking Orb Town Central.
Yeah. And we also, there was a little session just me and Heather did in the bathroom where supposedly a man named Ethel died, which that came from a different source.
Yeah, that came from the more reliable source of the one who actually kind of cleared the air with us and told us what was actually going on.
Mm-hmm. And we actually caught his breath on the camera. Yeah, and
we got an EVP, which was super clear.
Wow.
I was like, I was listening to it with my headphones in and it played out. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And I was like, I have to send this to Mac right away. She's going to freak out.
Yeah, I listened to it like 10 times.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So then that brings us right into the analysis section, right? So data analysis, you've got some juicy bits of data to sink teeth into. How do you go about analyzing it? How do you know this is an EVP? How do you know that this is not just
a false positive?
Like an accidental, say, you know, a corruption or something that wandered in, an audio bug, what if you will.
And I think kind of you definitely need to be able to look at it digitally. I find it really helps being able to see the sound waves when you're looking at an EVP, making sure and verifying that like someone's not moving the camera around with their hands or that there wasn't
background noise.
And when we do hear background noise or like someone's size or something like that, we try, you know, I've been very adamant about making sure that people are like, okay, that was me. I just sighed. That's not a ghost sigh, or that's not a ghost sneeze, you know? So that definitely helps verify that what you're actually hearing in the headphones when you go back to analyze is not something that somebody just didn't, you know, they didn't clarify was them. And that's why that's so important. But
you have some audio visual experience too, don't you?
I'm more visual. Andrew's kind of the audio guy.
Andrew's the other.
He's the other regional manager. Yeah, he's a lot better at audio than I am, but I'm a lot better at video than he is. So I guess we both have our strengths, but
I don't know anything about either.
But that makes a really good investigator and a data analyst, because as we've always approached it, we kind of take a look at it like we have this piece of evidence. Mm-hmm. We have this artifact in a video or a sound file. And we look at it from a point of view of like, what would I do as a audio technician or a video editor, or what to create it, right? What would I do to hoax this? What would I do to make it happen? And if there's less on the side of being an easily generated, easily faked kind of situation, it lends more credibility, especially under the circumstances, because you're documenting how the evidence was collected, right? You yourself collected this evidence.
Yeah.
Right. If it's a video that's been given to you to look at, then there's a chain of custody. Like, well, where did it come from? Who generated it?
Yeah.
And where did it come from there, and everything along the way. So those are all things that people need to keep in mind when we're looking at a video or photo, video, audio, any of that. Mm-hmm. And, would you agree?
Oh, totally. Absolutely. I completely agree. And, one thing I thought of too, while you were saying that, was, like, for instance, with the orbs, we made sure to get visual confirmation that it wasn't dust, because we showed what the light with the dust flurries looks like versus the orbs, and they move very differently and they look very differently. Mm-hmm. And so we have that verification, and we can put it for viewers side by side, so that they can compare them and know that this is not just a dust flurry that caught on camera. This is actually an intelligent entity that's an orb.
Yeah, that's also a good indicator that something that appears to be an intelligent interaction with this manifestation, right?
Yeah,
there's a whole orbs are a whole topic we can dive into.
And then there's the whole topic of like residual versus intelligent energy, and that's just a whole thing.
Yeah, we can do a whole episode on each of those, which probably we will eventually. So that brings us to the report. You haven't written the report yet, right?
No, but I look forward to it, because I like to think I'm very eloquent when writing.
And one of the things that was so important that we learned with our process is when you do the initial walkthrough, you need to have scheduled it out so you can do the investigation
at least a day or so afterwards, because when you go in and do that initial walkthrough and you're stirring stuff up,
you started.
And
you can't just walk away.
You can't just walk away, because things are going to get more active for the people who have to deal with that, like during the day.
Because we didn't schedule that, and then we had to like push aside things because we had to go back and kind of fix things that had happened.
Yeah. We had to finish.
Or we thought so anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's a good thing to do.
Definitely.
Sorry, I had to add that because
It's important. So we're I'm excited for the report, and maybe we'll, and when you do write the report, we will post it on the journal, on the blog.
Snazzy.
And link it to this episode.
Yay. Okay.
So yeah, I think, I mean, really awesome. That kind of, we're just about out of time, so that's perfect.
And that's all the time we have today, folks.
But yeah, this has been great. I'm really excited to have you guys on the team. And
so psyched.
It sounds like you guys, you're doing it. Like, I have no problems with you guys just handling it. I think you're doing a great job, and you're doing a great job with
just high five, by the way. Yeah. That was a high five.
And you're doing a great job with the videos, and Andrew's doing a good job with the audio and all that. So we're happy, and maybe we'll get him on to talk about he wants to do the Shiloh Battleground out there in Tennessee.
Oh yeah, he was mentioning
his first experiment. So we'll catch up on that and see how that goes
next time on the science. Oh gosh, I crypto messed it. Science Society. I messed up next time on the Crypto Science Society.
Yeah, keep an ear out. There's more good stuff coming. But thank you so much for listening. Your support is greatly appreciated. If you like this podcast and would like to hear more, please subscribe and share and let us know what you think in the comments. Find us on CastBox, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, Podcast Addict, Radio Public. And of course, you're welcome to email us at CryptoScienceSocietyX@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And visit the website at sciencecryptojournal.wordpress.com. We're sponsored by the Turn a Page Bookshop. Everything is done by the Crypto Science Society and its members. Written, produced, audio, video, edited. We are a multi-headed entity. I've done this one before.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I edited that video.
Multi-headed beast. The Crypto Science Society is great. If you want to get involved with us too, let us know. We'd like to have you. So, thanks, Mac.
Thank you.
We lost Janae in the time stream. Yes. She fell off the ship into the portal. We'll get her back. We'll loop back around and find her.
Yeah, we'll send a search party, a rescue team.
Yeah. Until next time.
Until next time.
Thanks a bunch. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.